Thanks for listening to the Review Pod. Thank you for using Racetech as well. I hear from the guys all the time. Lots of people using the code. Lots of people saving money, getting their suspension work done, getting their motor work done. And, yeah, they've turned into more than just a suspension shop these days. They do some motor work for some top teams in the sport as well. They just have to sign an NDA, so they can't tell you about it. But their CNC machines are working away at that. So if you're a tuner out there doing your own motor work and you need the precise precision that Racetech can give you, contact them. And they can do the work for you exactly the way you want each and every time. Racetech.com. Also, tell them you listen to Pulp MX. Give you a deal. All right, on to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication, your frustration.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Fly Racing Racer X Race Review Pod. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. We're going to look back at St. Louis, Triple Crown, Eli Tomac, Barcia, flags. Lots to talk about when it comes to this race in St. Louis. Thank you for listening. Thank you to the folks at Fly Racing. 25 years of Fly. You know the deal. You know the drill. These guys are great. And get it at your local dealer or motorsport.com. And you look at RJ Hampshire, Run and Fly. You look at Chance Hymus, Fly Guy. Max Anstey leading the points for a while. They actually had Anstey and RJ with the red plates, both wear and fly. Flyracing.com, please check them out at your local dealer or motorsport. And the Formula helmet's amazing. The Formula S helmet could save your life. If you download the app, it'll notify people when you crash. And just go to flyracing.com to read more about that Formula S helmet. It could literally save your life. Great job by those guys. And head to toe, they've got you covered. Fly Racing, of course, doing big things. Thank you to those guys. Renthal, Maxxis, Motorsport.com as well. I want to thank the folks at Renthal. You look at Monster Energy, Kawasaki, Factory, Honda, Red Bull, KTM. They've used using Renthal for years now, and they know why. It's the greatest brand out there in the terms of handlebars, sprockets, chains, all of that. Renthal.com, made over there in the UK to the tightest of tolerances. More titles than all the other brands combined. That should say something, right? Oftentimes, they sweep American and MXGP podiums. Yeah, the stuff's great. 7/8 bar, they still make it. 1/1/8 bar, they got that. They got the twin wall bar. They got that as well. So thanks to the folks at Renthal. Mountain bike stuff as well. Super informative website. So thank you to Renthal. Maxxis tires. Mountain bike tires are fantastic. Everybody knows that they're the tire to have when it goes to the mountain bike world. They got e-bike tires as well. And, of course, the PRMX guys, the Mad Parts Kawasaki guys, putting Maxxis tires into main events every weekend. And they got the soft intermediate to hard terrain tires. They got the MXSTs developed by McGrath. They got light truck tires, trailer tires. They sponsor a lot of things in moto. And, yeah, so support them, man, because they do a lot for the sport in terms of media coverage. So Maxxis.com. Look them up. You haven't thought about Maxxis for a while. Well, it's time to. Thank you to Maxxis. We'll tell you more about motorsport.com later on. But for now, it's me, JT Weege, special guest, Chris Kiefer, talking St. Louis and more. All right, everybody, on the line to talk about the St. Louis Supercross race, where a lot happened, and we got a lot to get into. First up, he enjoyed a comfortable visit at home this weekend, was not in the booth, was not at the race, and that's really sad. It's Jason Watt again. What's up, Weege?
Yeah. long road trip back to New Jersey, getting to hang out with the extended family.
Mm.
Can't wait to get back and hang out with you guys at a race.
Did you watch it live?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The great stylings of Justin Brayton got me through my afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, did watch the race live. Triple Crown Fever is always fun.
Yeah.
So it was enjoyable. Good excuse to escape for a bit.
Yeah.
So, yes, definitely took it all in. And overall, a night that was not free of drama and excitement and things to talk about. So that was good.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you can tell your family, like, this is for work. I have to watch this.
Oh, I mean, everything from websites to weed shows to I got to write a story. There was a lot of that going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also here, Fly Racing, 25 years of Fly, everybody. Please check them out. It's Jason Thomas. What's up, JT?
Not too much. Weege, you were missed. Of course, Weed Diffy had the reins covered, as you would expect. But yes, you were missed by all.
Oh, I appreciate it.
It was nice to have a true professional in the booth, if you ask me. A guy
he probably had his own pocket squares. I guarantee you he brings his own.
His own what?
Pocket squares.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just
he doesn't mess around.
It's nice to have someone established, calls Indy 500, you know, calls 24-hour car races, super professional in the booth.
It's true. Like, I was quite entertained.
All right. Are you back next weekend? Boston?
No. I didn't even realize it's actually 3 weekends off in a row, including next weekend where there's not a race. I don't even know what happened.
Jeez. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, lock and change. Maybe I'll never be back. Yeah, maybe I'll never be back. I mean, the plan is Philadelphia, but there's almost a month between these races that I'm doing. What if something changes?
Lots of things can happen.
COVID again? Or what are you leaning into here?
No, what if he gets arrested?
Yeah, hit by a bus.
Oh, Dre, you could die again before we go again. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Lots to talk about when it comes to that. I mean, we'll probably have a memorial pod for you.
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
You could cut down in a corner.
Oh, there almost was murder out of the racetrack.
That could get you.
There almost was a killing on the racetrack.
Well, yeah, lots to talk about when it comes to this race for sure. Triple Crowns are always great. St. Louis crowd was good, not great. Dirt was good, not great. It got better. Press day was horrendously ruddy, so much so that some riders didn't even ride the second session. But I think by Saturday, it got a little better overnight, you know, dries out a little bit. Track was good, JT. I thought the track was really good. It was exciting to see some different rhythms guys were able to do. And we'll get into that when it comes to Tomac. But, yeah, I thought it was a good day of racing night.
Yeah, it was. I did hear comments about lack of passing. I even tried to kind of ask Jet specifically, you know, as the track gets tougher, is that going to open up passing? And he was not having it. So, you know, I feel like I'm pretty attuned to what the tracks are like, but then I was hearing about the difficulty passing over and over. So I did like the track, but maybe it wasn't as good as we all thought. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Are we at the point? Okay. You guys know where I stand on this. These super nasty tracks to me offer up the best racing, which is sad because I know the riders and mechanics don't want to live with that on a weekly basis. But are we at the point where these dudes are so good and the bikes are so good, et cetera, that you can't build something naturally? Like, unless Mother Nature gets involved, can they not build something? Is it impossible now? Wow. Where they're all so good that, like, video, you build whatever you want and they're going to be within tenths or hundredths and, you know. The bikes
are so incredibly good, right? So building things that guys can't jump is almost impossible with the way it is now. You know, we kind of talked about this recently. I think it was Steve. You were saying, like, why are we doing 3.5-3s, things like that? Why are they 3 feet? If we're going to stick with that model, there are not many things that these riders can't jump. You know, we're seeing them put together things like when Jet went 5 at A1.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen things like this before. Until there's some sort of fundamental shift in track design, I think we might get more of this. Bikes are just getting better and better, right? The tracks are not getting more difficult, but the bikes are getting better, and the skill levels are continuing to improve as the bikes get better. So that's only going one direction.
Yeah, like, Steve, I know what you wanted to see coming into this. You know, you wanted to see some speed and scrubbing and skill, and oh my God, there was plenty of that. Like, these dudes were hauling. You know what's funny? I actually had my wife watching with me, and when she watched the Futures race and then Jet versus Tomac, like, even to her, the difference was startling. And I'm like, that's pretty wild that you can notice that. She's like, oh my God, these guys look so slow compared to Jet and Tomac. And I'm like, yeah. So my point is, this is excellent the way you're setting this up, JT. With 3-footers and 5-footers, can you really build a rhythm lane where Eli Tomac can go 10 bike lengths faster than Jet Lawrence to then beat him to the next corner or vice versa? What does it take for Cooper Webb to gain 10 bike lengths on Jason Anderson to set him up for the next corner? That's what they need, but I don't know how you do that when all the guys are this good.
Well, we can definitely start with more than nine whoops.
Okay, that might be the separator. That's a good point.
I mean,
it's true.
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
We are seeing the dozer whoops and nine, and I know in talking to some of the Dirtworks guys, it's killing them. Like
they want more.
They're just like, okay, here's nine and super tame. So we can start there. Mm-hmm. So,
is there like a wall jump 7-footer combo
thing?
Like,
but, I mean, you guys are right. They got the videos. They got the bikes. They got the videos with the shadow stuff.
Yeah, it's impossible to have a secret now. Like,
yeah.
It just is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Unless you're just never going to jump something until the main event, you just have to never do it. Otherwise, yeah, the secret's out. Like, even the privateer guys are going to know. You know, it's just, it's that way. You can't do, like, Stu used to do it once, and if you missed it, you missed it. Now you can't even do that. So I've heard talk about from riders about things that they can do if needed. They have it in their back pocket, but they just know they can never do it until the main event, which is scary. But yeah, I just think that's where we are. I don't know. I guess the next question is, what type of jumps could we build? You know, are we going to go much bigger with jumps? Because that's probably much more dangerous. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. I think we can diagnose a problem, but I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, you get ruts like Seattle, and suddenly going 3-3-3 through a rhythm lane is like they can only each do it 50% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So then Webb and Sexton are going back and forth like, he had two good laps, he had two good laps. But on a regular track, and plus, JT, I'm sure you can speak to this, everyone's during-the-week programs probably aren't that varied. There's probably not nearly as much variance to what people are doing to prepare during the week as there was 20 years ago either. So that's further tightening it, right?
Well, yeah, everybody has good tracks. Everybody knows what works and what doesn't because they have so much data to support it, right? Like, everybody knows what you're supposed to be doing. And, I mean, you go back to Alden Baker, and Alden Baker, I think, has – not everybody does exactly what he's doing, but I think a lot of people learned a lot from what he brought, right? And then there's been fine-tuning since then to – I think, you know, Kenny would say, like, well, some of those things don't work for me. Okay, well – you're not that far away from doing those things. Maybe you just, you know, it's a hybrid of that. But yeah, I think everybody's programs would look very similar to the untrained eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good luck.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah, for sure. And I'm one of the guys, you know, to complain about it here and there. But it's all true. And, you know, I just like there's a danger in listening to the riders too much because it all depends on how their night went. It all depends on how things are going with their, you know, their race.
They're going to lean into what they do well, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, as far as like listening to them after a race, like the thing is like these dudes are just like when it comes to Seattle and Indy and these places, Detroit, they're just like, I'm just trying to double the jumps. And in my mind, I'm like, well, that's not good, you know? So, but yeah, we'll have to see.
And my point the last few weeks is that maybe it is good. They won't, I don't expect them to like it. It's not enjoyable. It doesn't feel good. It's not fun.
Yeah.
But that challenge is what's missing from when we don't have bad weather.
Well, and the elephant in the room is we the tools that we would use to harden a racetrack up like Indy are not available anymore. You know, so we are so much more subject to weather even in domes than we were 5 years ago. You know, that's just a fact, right? And there's nothing anybody can do about it. These things happened. But that's the reality, you know. Well, like, Indy would have never been that soft if we were able to use agents that we were able to use in the past.
And then when
so is that why this press day was so bad then?
Oh, of course it is. Absolutely, you would have never seen a track that wet, right? Because if the dirt's wet when they bring it in, fine, we can dry it in the 2 days, you know, that we have, 3 days that we have, no problem. But now I really feel like the SMX track group feels like they're handcuffed. Like they only have so many things they can do. They can't turn the heaters way up. They can't use lime or any drying agents because we had such a bad situation with that. So what are you left to do with that other than just work on it 10 million times?
And I think if you're Feld, you're going to talk. You're going to listen to this podcast and be like, I don't know, man. We got great attendance. Fans are loving it.
Yeah, I'm not saying – is a debilitating thing.
I'm saying
– I know what you're saying. I'm just saying we all want to make things as good as possible, right? But I think you have to look at every variable as to why things aren't better, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get into it. By the way, thanks to those who came up for the live show on Friday night.
Yeah, it was packed.
It was packed, and the audio wasn't great. We know that. That sucks. That's unfortunate. But it's also unfortunate that the audio for the recording was not good either. So that's probably not going to work. So, yeah. But thanks for coming out, everybody. Adam Sean Cirillo was there. Phil as well. And we had a national anthem. The girl did a great job. The woman did a great job. So thanks for coming out. Thanks to the Motorcycle Museum there. That's a really cool building. We met the owner as well. Super nice guy. So thanks, everybody. And we're trying to work on another live show here shortly. But the Jasons on the line haven't really given me much feedback.
What do you mean? I'm in.
Did you say you're in? Because I felt like we were saying the problems that might happen.
Well, I felt like that show was earlier. The conflicting situation I always felt like was earlier.
Okay.
Am I wrong in that? I mean, if we do a 7:30 show, okay. I feel like we could pull that off.
Okay. Weege never.
So, I'm in as long as I can't not be in, I'm right. in.
And there's also some new developments coming, perhaps for SMX, that I will be leaning into if it happens.
Well, you have some demands that need to be met, sir.
Well, if it happens, you two are not going to be safe from this for a couple of months. So
I feel like I've had a helping hand. I've been guiding you through and helping as much as possible. So why would you hammer me on that?
Because that's what I do.
Got it.
Okay, Weege, do you want to start with Tomac, Barcia Lawrence, or a Red Cross flag? Where would you like to start, sir? You could pick a bingo card.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm gonna go with the feel good here, and let's just celebrate. I don't want to diminish what is awesome that Eli Tomac won, and also, yes, I know Jet had some obstacles, almost literally thrown his way, or held his way, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But Eli rode awesome, and I don't want to make it, you know, I don't want to have any of that take away from it at all. He rode great, and suddenly, I don't know if you guys listened. Did you guys listen to the press conference, the post-race press conference?
I did not.
I did.
Oh, you guys will love this. So Eli was asked, what's the difference? He's like, just executing, man, just putting the puzzle together, a few things in my body, just executing, just putting it together. And then
finally, and also hurt my ankle.
Yeah, and then finally after 10 minutes, he finally breaks and says, I guess I should just say, I hurt my ankle 3 weeks ago, and I didn't really have any balance in the ruts, and the ankle finally felt good. And I'm just like, dude, you send people like us into a three-week down the rabbit hole. Is he good? Is it over? Is he going to retire? Why is he doing this? Should he do this? Will he do this? What's going to happen? After Daytona, I guess that's what it would time out to. After Daytona, he's been bad, right? Yeah. Three bad races.
Yeah.
He got second two races in a row. He's out of the top five three races. He had an ankle injury, everybody. I don't know why these guys do this. I understand he's a proud guy that doesn't want to make excuses. But, bro, he was getting seventh and eighth. Something's up. So I don't want to take anything away from him. He's back. He's good. And I want to say, I don't know if you guys agree with me, that second race where he hung on Jet for a while, to me, that's about as close as anyone has come to, like he was not in the Jet zone of the 2 second gap and just like, yeah, whatever, I'm good. Like, that was pushing it. That was impressive to me. He didn't win it, but yeah. I was like, that was no joke.
Okay, so I would totally agree with you, except I felt like Jet was like, all right, watch this.
But he pulled away.
He pulled away.
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah. I don't think anything happened. Yeah, I don't think anything happened.
He just pulled away.
Yeah. So it was five laps of maybe Fury or some, maybe yeah. five or seven laps of Fury.
Yeah. So
it was over.
I got to say, too, I have some deep, deep, deep sources around Tomac.
Mm.
And I've been investigating for a while and never did an ankle injury come up at all.
No, what?
I just want to say, like, he's got tremendous sources that will never crack. So maybe if the CIA needs anybody, there's a few people I can recommend. Because I'm like, what the hell is going on? What's going on? Are you testing? Or are you panicking? Like, and everyone's, you know. So, yeah.
I would expect nothing less from the Tomac camp. I mean, I think that's just the way they operate.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
For better or for worse, we just don't reveal a lot.
Yeah, and so I did not know that till just right now, Weege. You said that. So he says his ankle is good, or better.
I mean,
yeah,
or better. Yeah.
Well, look, but okay. Yeah. On the flip side,
Yeah.
I'm sure he's right, and I'm sure I get it. I feel like his riding has been really good in qualifying. His just starts have been garbage, and he's not been able to do anything once he gets, you know, once he's 10th place. So
are the two correlated, though, is what I would ask.
Well, but he can put in a heater in qualifying.
Yeah, I know. I it's impossible to answer.
Right.
It's rhetorical. But I'm a big believer that when everything's good and you feel like you should be winning, the starts kind of come to a lot of the time. Not always, but a lot of the time.
Really funny you say that, because Lewis Phillips, our buddy at Vital, there's a little Tomac Lewis beef happening. Lewis asked them that exact same question. Hey, Lewis said, I feel like starts are, you know, something where you're confident and then you know you can get the start, and that's why you get good starts. I feel like confidence has a lot to do with starts. How do you think? And Tomac didn't even answer. He just stared at him, and they were like in a stare down. It's on a Vital MX, I guess. And he was looking deep into Lewis's soul, and finally he just said, I don't know, or something. Like, Lewis said he finally broke, but he was super weird.
No, Lewis said he had to ask another question. There was no answer. Like, he went to another question, and he got a yes. Oh, yep.
Yep. The interview was over.
Yep.
So Eli and is not happy with Lewis for, I don't exactly know, but anyways, but he did ask him that question. Yes.
You never know what Lewis may have said in the past. Like, these guys hear this stuff.
No,
right?
No, it's not the question. Something, there's other beef. And
there's
then this.
Yeah,
this,
there's something there.
Yeah, yeah. Right, but it wasn't exactly that question Lewis asked him. if you're confident and you're healthy, confidence, you have a good week of practice, that I firmly believe that leads over into starts.
Well, if you know you're not right, you don't want to get to the front. Like, you just don't. Like, it's just different. I don't know I'm not a psychologist, so I can't tell you. Psychiatrist, whatever. But there's something to the sports psychology aspect of that.
But I think you're right. Like, never mind that Jet won and then got docked, and you know the missile happened in three. Just yay for Eli Tomac getting a win. 1-1-1. That's cool. They made up a bunch of points on Jet. The fans loved it. Absolutely going nuts for Eli. That was cool as well. So yeah, that was great to see. And so I was asking deep sources, what is up with the starts? I was told the starts are great during the week.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And then the fake start happened, Weege, and he was terrible. And I'm like, oh boy, I don't put a lot of stock in the fake starts. I've said that, and because you never know who's trying, who's not. But in this case, I specifically watched him, and it was garbage. And I'm like, oh boy. But then they were great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's just – I'm not putting all this on this ankle thing. You know, like he said, there's all these other things he just wasn't executing. Yeah, I'm sure if he had better starts the last 3 weeks, the results would have been maybe better than 8th or 7th or whatever he was getting. I'm not saying it was all ankle, something was up. He even alluded to still not, for whatever reason, really comfortable on these soft tracks. I mean, it's not as bad as that Detroit meltdown. Obviously, they got better. But I think you could say that let's see, Arlington, Daytona, and here are probably his best races midway through the year, and obviously Anaheim too. And the ones in between were not like Daytona's easy, but it's a little different. I mean, if he's struggling with the soft tracks, I would say that the Seattle and Indy run is even worse than, say, Arlington and what we just saw. So maybe that's part of it. It's several pieces, I guess. Start sucked, got better, ankle got better.
Yeah.
And the track was not hard, but harder than last
and,
week.
Man, you watched him out of the gate. He was good out of the gate. I was even wondering if he was hearing that air thing again or something, because his jumps were great. That wasn't it in this one, but I'm just saying they look like that. His jumps were phenomenal. And so I don't know if they changed anything. I don't know about that, but yeah. Great race. Eli Tomac. He's back.
Oh, it's all anybody wanted. Like, who cares how. First of all, he rode awesome. Again, I don't want to take anything away from it. But even if Eli had a race where he sucked and seven dudes crashed and he wins, who cares?
Right.
I mean, we were in panic button mode, I think.
Three straight races out of the top five has never happened for him.
Yeah, this was awesome. Yeah.
So is he got the title won? But look, even if he goes 1-2-2, say Jet beat him in the second one, right? Obviously, that penalty was a little, we'll get into that. But even if he goes 1-2-2, it's still a great race because he did hang with Jett for 8 minutes in Moto2. Yeah. You know, So still a great race.
I mean, he was a different guy all weekend. We talked about it. I look very smart now. I just, you know, I saw what I saw on Friday. We talked about it at the live show. He came out ripping on Friday. I was trying to point it out with also not painting myself in a corner because if he sucked on Saturday, I'd look really stupid. But he was one of the only guys that rode like the second session with really any intensity. You know, Jett and Webb didn't even ride the second session on Friday because the track was so ruddy. But I'm just telling you, man, you could see it. He was just feeling it all weekend. Mm-hmm. And that showed up at the race. And I don't know what the difference is. No idea. But it was visually different on Friday, and that just kind of carried on.
And we might have an Indy type of Seattle type of track in Foxborough. Who knows? So that'll be another test. Because you're right, Weege. This weekend was not as bad as those ones, as the ones he's been struggling on. So,
Who knows?
But, yeah, good job. All right.
Awesome.
Next up on the bingo card?
Red Cross?
Okay. Red Cross. Look, I guess a few years ago, they were waving the Red Cross more. When Dunge got the penalty in Detroit, they were waving it. And everyone decided, stop waving it, because it doesn't look like a Red Cross necessarily. So now it's just being held out. So, of course, this weekend, I heard they should wave it. They should wave it. But, it was full of ruts. AP kind of took me through it in the post-race. Finish line was full of ruts. Your head was down. You were coming around the tight on the inside. And, yeah, I mean, it's sitting there. You see the photos. It's out. It's Vince Freeze. Vince Freeze's bike broke, so that's a whole thing also. He was off the side of the track. I'm not one to say, like, hey, they shouldn't have even been a Red Cross, but there probably shouldn't even been a Red Cross. Vince was pushed off to the side. But I get it. It was out, and those guys saw it, and you got to do it.
I don't think they did see it, though. That's the problem.
No, but, but the other guy saw it. Other riders saw it. So, you know.
I hate it. I hate the penalty. I get it. But, man, I went over there and stood after the race in the finish line looking at kind of the angle coming out and where your head would be and all those things, trying to, like, put myself in their shoes. That is a tough one. That is so tough, especially factor in on top of that, you've got a checkered flag waving on top of the metal flag, right? So, like, even if you're using your peripheral to kind of see the flag, because you can't look directly at it. Why would you ever look directly at it? You know, you're going to use your peripheral to kind of see what's going on. You see the waving checkered flag. That's probably all you're picking up on. Like, I understand the rule. I don't know that they had a choice, but this is such a bad, bad situation. I felt for all those guys, everybody that got penalized. I'm like, I don't feel right about this penalty, the way it went down. The only thing I can say is there's got to be someone in the corner with a yellow flag out. There's got to be some sort of moving forward, some sort of differentiation. This can't happen again because I don't think there will be a different result. Like, you do that again, it's going to be 9 out of 10 times the same way because I don't think they're going to be looking for that. It's just too far to the right. The corner drifted to the left. There's a checkered flag on top of it. It's a tough deal, man.
Yeah, I have an honest question here. We've seen these Red Cross things happen a lot, and I understand, yes, the rule is the rule. You can't back down from the rule. Like, it waves, you can't jump. However, in any of the rolling out of this rule and enforcing this rule, has there ever been, when cooler heads prevail, like off-season or in between races, when we're not discussing any specific rider's penalty, when obviously they want to defend themselves, has anyone ever said, hey, can you guys see these? Like, have they ever gotten the rider's perspective of, like, what level of tunnel vision do you have? What areas of the track can you not see? Because that's what I always wonder. It's easy to say the flag was out, bro. But, yeah. JT, there are parts of the track where you're just like, sorry, man, I'm not going to be able to see it over there. I'm just not. If you want safety, put it in a different spot.
Sometimes it's, you know, the flashing red lights help because it's an attention grabber. Mm-hmm. But this was such a unique setup with the track going away from, your eyes are going away from where that is, right? So it's counterintuitive to see it.
Yep.
And then on top of that, if you did get any attention drawn, it's certainly not going to be on a red and white flag in a myriad of colors. Think about all the colors around that track.
It was out. I mean, it was out the lap before.
I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, right. When you have a checkered flag on top of it, that is going to naturally grab your attention, not a static medic flag that's there. So, I mean, clearly, you know, some guys saw it, some didn't. Like, I heard people saying, well, Webb didn't jump at the line. Well, Webb didn't jump it because he almost ran into somebody going over the finish line. That's not why he didn't jump.
No, he didn't jump it because he, in midair on the white flag, noticed, oh, crap, I just jumped on a red. That's why. Yeah, so and also he didn't see it when he needed to see it.
Side by side, yeah.
And AP said he saw it after he took off from the jump. Yeah.
Right.
Almost all those white flag guys in midair looked back and were like, oops. Yeah. And then obviously they didn't jump with the checker.
I have more of an issue of it just being out being out in the first place because Vince's bike broke. By the way.
What do you mean?
He's just saying with that situation, there shouldn't have been a medic flag.
It shouldn't have been a medic flag. He was off the side of the track. Like
that could have happened, though. I mean, if somebody crashes there, we're in the same spot. I know this was a very... like you're saying in this one specific situation, but to me, we need to think of this situation again and what we're going to do about it next time, because it's not going to be the last. I don't think it's going to be the last time we ever run into something like this.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I agree on that. I think part of it too, is because it's the finish line. Also, it is it's a steeper takeoff, than some of the jumps that we've seen penalized before. Like Sexton's rhythm jump, I would think was shorter. This is a taller one. Is what a finish line? 8 feet, 10 feet? I don't know. So you're looking, you know, more up. I think the obstacle type was a problem, because, you know, even on these other, like Sexton's penalty last year, like when he got penalized, I thought it was pretty plainly out, and other riders saw it. I think the finish line is an issue, the specific jump of it being an issue.
Yeah.
But I don't even think it should have been out. Like I don't know, but. You got to penalize him. You have to. You have to. If it's out and these guys are jumping it, we've been way too vigilant the last, I don't know, 5 years on these penalties, right? So
yep. We have to do it, but can we do something in the future where they won't be forced to penalize them and the guys don't get put into a situation where they – because I guarantee you, Jet's like, what, dude, really? Like,
yeah.
I couldn't see it. I think he's right. I think he's right. Like, I think the rule needed to be enforced, but I also think he's right. So what do we do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
So what's the difference between not seeing it on any other jump or there? It's you didn't see it. Like, you didn't see
because
it.
Because the corner's there, and there's also a checkered flag on top of it, I think, is a significant difference.
I think
they need to ask the riders, like, give us some suggestions of when – okay, give us some scenarios where the flags were easy to see and where they were not easy to see. And let's try to come up with some parameters for when or where these could be displayed for ways that are easier for you guys to see. I don't think it's fair to just pull it out and be like, it's on you, man. Anywhere on the track, it's on you.
Like, I also really like whenever there is a serious situation on the track, they have people that will get out into, like, Dig Dugs or whoever to slow these guys down. We see that in rhythm sections all the time. They will protect the side of the track.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's 4 or 5 AMA officials that are authorized to go out there at different points of the track. Yeah.
Right. Like that would give advance warning, right? That's the problem. In a nutshell, that's the problem is there was not enough advance warning for them to back out and jump.
How about this? I said this last year when Sexton got penalized. This is a crazy idea. How about increasing the size of the flag? They've been the same since the 70s. How about a big-ass Red Cross flag? Like, I'm talking like a knight going into battle. Like, I'm talking Braveheart.
Yeah.
Like, what about just making a big-ass Red Cross flag and you unfurl it like you would a king holding court? You unfurl this flag. And like, why are they the same size as they've been since the 1970s?
I just feel you got to ask the riders all these things. Would it help if it was like this? Would it help? Maybe, JT, your point. Maybe when we have a red cross, we will now have 2 yellow flags always leading up to it. So when you start seeing yellows, you know you can keep doing your deal. But be aware that there could be a red cross forthcoming. Be on the lookout. Or would you like the flags to be bigger? Or should it always be on the left side of a right-hand corner, actually, because you might be looking away, et cetera, et cetera. I think you need to ask the riders, I don't think it's fair to just wave it or hold it and just be like, that's on you. Because I think, JT, the point you're making is sometimes it's easier to see than others. That was not a good spot. Help them see it. Help them see it. Ask them what it would take for them to see it more easily.
Yep. And I mean, the riders don't, they're not trying to endanger anyone. They're not trying to jump when they're not supposed to. They're not trying to get away with anything, right? So the spirit of this flag is keeping people safe. So let's figure out a way to do a better job of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Make them bigger.
Yep.
But some of these penalties in outdoors, like, it's a high speed right hander and the dude's on the far left side of the track. You're like, you know, like, how's this guy going to see this? Like, there's some spots where you're like, it's silly. So, Weed, you're right. But it does suck that we had Anderson got penalized twice. It's such an Anderson move. Just degaff. You know?
So, there is a rumor out there. There's a rumor out there that this whole scenario is still under a bit of review. Mm. And there could be more changes coming to the penalties. We'll have to see on that.
Okay.
But I did hear that today, that it's not 100% final on all of that yet.
Well, the 450 guys were on the gate before the results were posted. I mean, it was – like, we didn't know what the hell had to happen in race three for the winner. Like, it was
– No, nobody did.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
We'll see about that. By the way, too, I meant to bring this up at the top of the pod. Word is, might be one less practice session next year for Supercross. Hallelujah.
Yeah, I think it's one.
Hallelujah. Yeah. So let's hope so. All right, Weed, so the final spot on the bingo card is Barcia Jet Lords. I talked to Ollie Stone, the manager. He said Barcia felt really bad. He almost thought about pulling off. Take that for what it's worth. Barcia went over to Jet after the race on the track, and they had a long discussion. And then after, in the pits, Barcia still in his gear, walked over to the Honda truck to discuss everything. And I mean, they were doing everything they could to get out in front of this thing. I asked Lars for an interview after the race. He declined it, and Lars is an awesome dude. He was still not happy. I mean, the points lead got shrunk considerably, so for Lars to refuse an interview is quite something. But I mean, I guess the whole thing is just like, I don't believe Barcia meant to do that, but also, what was the plan? Say Jet didn't turn down. I think Jet deserves a little bit of this blame pie. Jet didn't turn down. What was Barcia's plan for getting out of that corner anyways? I mean, it's classic. I did write in my observations column last week that it's been boring because we haven't had any Barcia incidents this year. So that was great timing by me. JT, a real unfortunate situation. I talked to somebody at the AMA that said there may be something coming more for Barcia. No penalty right now, but like they're talking maybe probation or something, or maybe he's already on probation. God knows how that stands. I mean, JT, you don't think Barcia meant to do that?
No, I don't. I don't. For me, there's blame. There's a lot of blame to be given here on multiple fronts.
Yeah, we have blame pies. We have percent of blame pies.
Yep, sure. And the telltale sign for Barcia not meaning to do this was, when he means to do it, he tells you he means to do it. He doesn't care. He would have been like, yeah, this is what I do. Like, don't leave the door open on the first lap, bro. You know what I mean? Like, that is his MO. He doesn't really pull punches. You know, like, even if he's very rarely ever in, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do. Like, that is not his MO in this scenario, which tells you really all you need to know. That, was it a poor decision? Okay. I can understand that take. Did he misinterpret Jet's line? Was he more worried about Freezy behind him than he was concerned with Jet in front of him? I'm okay with all of those things, but if there are people out there, and I'm sure there are, because that's how opinions work, that think that Barcia went in there to tee Jet up, that's not what this was.
It's not
what it was.
Reasonable fans don't think that. I really don't.
Are people that are unreasonable fans.
Yeah, I know.
In every sport.
But that was a hard hit, dude. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So how I saw this, and I broke it down on our SMX post-race show, I went out there and stood in the turn. And we have a few minutes before we film, and I walked from the corner before, And I just tried to take in every aspect of it from where Jet was, from where Barsha was, from where Freezy was behind Barsha, which is a big part of this. And it's one of the widest corners I've ever seen in Supercross. And I don't take that statement lightly or make it lightly. The range from the inside to the where Jet entered the corner was incredibly wide, right? So for Jet's part, you know, on the first lap, there's a pretty common thought, like you can't just weave all over the track on the first lap because there's traffic everywhere. You just have to know that. That's a very basic principle, is you have to think that there's always someone on each side of you on the first lap. So for Jet to enter on the very outside like that and then make that aggressive of a cut down angle, he has to take some blame. It's just, that's just the way it goes. And I think anybody who's spent a lot of time racing or in main events would agree with that. You know, this penalty for that mistake was pretty rough, no doubt about it, but you can't do things like that. You can't race on the first lap like you would race on the 10th lap. The track is not free. Like, it's not open like that to do that. So I think that's part of it is on Jet. You know, part of it is on Barsha for drawing that aggressive of a line, because you also have to be ready for the guy in front of you to do anything on the first lap. And he left no room for anything to go wrong. If Jet pivoted earlier than he anticipated, Barsha was going way too fast to do anything other than just center punch him. You know, that's part of the first lap too, is you have to have your head on a swivel and be ready for the unpredictable things to happen on the first lap, right? That's why you see people being so cautious that first lap, is because there are so many people maneuvering in every direction based off and correlated to the actions that are happening in front and behind them, right? Everybody's they're having to move like split second decisions because there are people everywhere, right? So you can't just go flat out everywhere in every section on the first lap. So I know Barsha was trying to protect from freezing.
Yeah. So that's what I think was happening, right? You agree?
For sure. He was.
Yeah.
Yep. But you have to, I was trying to think of this. Okay. If I'm Barsha and I have Freezy behind me, which I have a million times, I've had Freezy behind me more times than I'd want to, what do you do there? And, you know, I think if Barsha had to do it over again, the way he can get away from that and protect against Freezy is just go to the very inside in that corner
and pivot.
And I went and looked. There was a rut. There was a rut to take in the very inside of that corner. So he could go, he could drift out in the berm before and then just hug that inside line, protect against Freezy, and then he's not so subject to whatever Jet's move is in front of him. So
yeah,
it's really easy to play armchair quarterback. After the race today, where I've had time to review it, I've looked at pictures, I've watched the incident 50 times, I've looked at a million different screenshots that people have sent me, and I feel really confident now in my take on it. It was a very unfortunate set of circumstances where there were several mistakes made, I believe. Unfortunately, yeah, Jet took the brunt of it, and
I'm going 85-15, blame pie.
On Barsha?
Yes.
Okay. I'm more like 70-30, 75-25,
okay.
Maybe 70-30.
Okay.
Because Jet,
yep.
The angle was so aggressive. Now, the impact was severe, right? So you could say, yeah, that should never be that severe of an impact. Like, Barsha's going way too fast in that moment. But the likelihood of him having to check up or stand the bike back up because he is way too aggressive and his pivot down there is pretty high. You know, it didn't have to be Barsha. It could have been anybody there. And they'd be like, whoa, like you can't cut down right there. Right. Like there were two lines in the corner. That's another part of this. There was one that Jet's in. He goes way out early and they were apexing and coming down the berm in the middle part of it. Jet came down even earlier than that. And then there was a second apex in that berm for people that were going in mid corner or inside and pivoting late and coming out of the berm late, which is where Barsha was headed to. He just, yeah, there was no way to get there with Jet obviously coming down across that line. So
yeah, I thought that,
I don't know. I really thought I would be like 95-5 Barsha. I really did. And I'm glad I didn't just go all the way in during the broadcast, because now after watching it, I think that Jed has to be a little bit more aware than that. I do, and that pains me to say because I'm such a Jet fan, but that's my honest take, is Jet wasn't aware enough for it being the first lap.
That's what I needed to hear. I try not to weigh in on these things too much. I mean, I've never been out there, and I feel like block passes are just, it's like arguing politics. Like, people already feel the way they feel. All I wanted to know, and thank you for answering this, is where was Barcia going? Because when you see these screenshots, you're like, bro, he's not going to make this turn. Like, what is his plan here? But you're saying once you did go down and look, and what I really need to do due diligence, the only way to get these things right is you have to look at all the previous laps in a corner and see where people are going. So you're saying there was a line that Barcia was trying to get to. It wasn't him going straight into the bales or straight to the exit or straight into Jet.
No, there was a second, like, and that's part of this, is that corner was so wide. It's one of the widest corners I've ever seen, right? Which allowed for two separate entries and two separate exits.
Yeah.
He was beelining it for that second one to try to close Vint off from any angle. Yep. And it's the same thing you could say for Jet. Yep. Barcia's got to be more aware of where Jet is. Jet's got to be more aware of Barcia is. It was just like the most unfortunate, coming together of those two mistakes at once.
You got to realize if you're Barcia, it's the first lap. Like, there could be tons of dudes right there. But
Jet, same thing for Jet.
I thought there'd be more passing in that corner. It really didn't turn out, like you said, as wide as it was. It didn't turn out as good as you thought. It is just like, look, man, freeze. Like, freeze. The bike breaks. Up the face of the finish, and he causes the flag. Barcia's move is freeze. Freeze in Dallas. He didn't even do anything. Jet ran into him. And then, of course, all the things that Freeze has actually done. Like, this is phenomenal. This is a record that is just incredible. That it all comes down to Vince Freeze. Someone check, like, some natural disasters, this bridge thing in Baltimore. Like, check other things and Vince's whereabouts.
If people were trying to come up with scenarios of, like, how could Jet, he's riding so well, he's got a points lead, he seems to have got rid of the big mistakes, what could cost him the title? Certainly somewhere on the bingo card is some combination of Barcia and or Freezy.
Right.
Some combo of Barcia and or Freezy.
Or maybe throwing in Anderson, but
Did you guys see the photo of Freezy's angle into that corner?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm going to send this, guys, so you guys carry on. I'm going to grab this photo and send it to you, and it's going to blow the roof off.
Because, if you're wondering what Barcia's plan was, you're telling us we're really going to wonder what Freeze's plan was? That's what you're saying?
Yeah. He used that rut that you were talking about. Freeze just went inside. He didn't even go to the berm.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you're talking about. Now, my fear is, I guess we'd have to ask Barcia to find out, did Barcia do something to Freeze in those first couple corners, which led Barcia to be like, oh my God, this is like a bank robbery now. I have to get out of here.
Yeah.
Cause
I think
that that would lead a man to do crazy things.
No, I think if that's Benny Bloss, that doesn't happen.
No, he's not worried about it.
Well, it's like when you're innocent, but you get pulled over by the cops and you instantly get nervous and your blood pressure spikes. You haven't even done anything wrong. And the cops like, why are you sweating? I'm like, I don't know, man, you're the cops. It's like having Freezy behind you. Like, you haven't done anything wrong, but holy hell, the things that could happen because you're behind me.
Yeah.
Same scenario.
Yeah.
Horror movie, JT. Horror movie.
Damn, dude. But that's how a season gets ruined right there,
Can you imagine?
Jet seems okay. His points lead is – I'm not worried about his points lead. I know Lars was. He made that comment. I'm not. The kid still rode great. And could have won, and this was a weirdo thing. But again, like in Seattle, it took a stall, a crash, and getting stuck behind a lapper. In St. Louis, it took a penalty and an act of terrorism almost to
– Horror movie.
To knock the dude down and lose these points, So, I'm not that worried about it. I don't know if you guys are, but –
I think the only thing here is, and I've used this analogy a few times, so bear with me, but it's like letting a team hang around in the fourth quarter. You don't take the opportunities, or you let opportunities slip away to put a team away, and all it takes is one drive, right? Who gets the ball last? Yeah. That's the situation. I'm not saying that's going to go this way, but that's the risk.
Yeah, 8 points.
That is the risk.
Yep.
is letting it go deep here, and then it's anybody's ball game. Where I think everybody's looking at this going, man, Jed has been the best guy for a little while here, and the points are going the opposite way.
All right, good talk on that. Let's bring in our buddy Chris Kiefer, who came out to this race and wasn't happy and complained. And let's get his take on a few things of the day as well. So let's bring him in here. All right, we got him on right now. It's Chris Kiefer. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey guys, how are you? Nice to be here. Full pull for me.
Okay, for the record though, at about 3 o'clock, you're like, I want to go home. That's what you said.
I mean, to be fair, it was like 2:30.
Okay. Well, I asked him in the press box, what time are you going home today? He's like, nope, tomorrow. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I almost said you're going to regret that.
It was a long day, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast. It was a long day. It just futures, KJSC, I don't know. It was a long day, Chris. Thanks for hanging in there.
Here's what I don't understand. You guys do this all the time, every week, right? I love dirt bikes. I think I love dirt bikes more than anyone on this show. But, like, it gets boring up there at the press box. I get bored. I need to do something. I need some labor.
That's the difference. I like watching it. And you would rather be riding, right? So that the different, that's a, I think, distinct difference there. I would much rather be at the races than I would be out riding.
Yeah. I would rather be like, I was almost going to go down the pits and ask like Tony Alessi if he needs help with the rig or ask Cooler or something. I need to do something.
You should have.
Yeah, Cooler Vision. We could have had the Cooler Vision.
Cooler Vision. You could have helped Freezy with his bike in the second race. You could have gotten involved with Freezy Barsha in the third race. Oldenburg flipping on that first rhythm.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on though. Yeah. I mean, I give you guys props because you do get there early, you make the rounds, you talk a lot, you do the track walk, you go up to the top of the Empire State Building and watch the race. It's a long day. And then you get back at 10, you can't eat dinner because all you got is squirrel meats up at the press box. You don't got anything substantial. So like there's a lot of moving parts that people don't know about.
Well, these gentlemen get catered meals down below. We don't really get that. So, yeah, they're a little better off. But the press box is high in St. Louis, for sure. You know, I'll give you that.
I think, honestly, when I left the press box to go down for the second round of practice down by the, you know, near the infield, I, like, got more excited. I could smell the bikes. I could feel the motorcycle. Like I was more into it down there than being up there. I feel like I'm detached too much.
Kiefer, have you ever watched practice from the floor?
I end up going down from the press box to watch in the stands, but never on the floor. No.
Well, I don't know the next time you're going to one, maybe when we go back west or something, but I didn't do that much myself, but RC and I tend to watch big TV guys free practice on the floor. And it is pretty awesome, and you'd probably appreciate it even more than I would. My big take is you watch someone like Dean Wilson, who if you quiz most fans would think Dean is struggling, say getting 12th place before he got hurt.
Yep.
But you pick any guy like that out, and you're like, oh my God, he is hauling ass.
Yes.
And you do not get that from the press box.
You don't. You're right. And we talked about that with Adam when he was on the show on Friday night. Just how good Adam is, right? And he's rolling around in 10th and 11th, 12th.
Yeah.
It's just hard to do when you're in the stands or up in the press box.
Yep.
You're a man of the people, though, Kiefer. Who'd you talk to in the pits? What'd you find interesting when you went down in the pits? I know I saw a lot of hugging by you. You're a big hugger.
Well,
you hug too much.
No, I think people know that I'm a hugger, so they hug me. So, like, I'm okay with it, so I hug back, right?
A lot of hugging, man, when I'm
around. Boise, all my friend crew are huggers as well, so I feel comfortable with it.
Yeah,
you do, Kiefer.
I feel like if we hug, we know each other on a certain level, and I care about you, so I'm hugging you, right? Like I feel like I would hug you, Steve, but you don't like him. I feel like JT and I could hug, and it wouldn't be a thing.
Oh, I would do it, no problem.
Yeah, right. And I think Weege would want to hug as much.
Oh, I would do it though. I'm okay. Down.
Yeah, as
long as Steve's not watching.
I'm in the pits and he's hugging everybody. It's like, it's, you know, I'm just like.
Look at him. Is Steve's fist bumping,
Steve's
guys?
Very cynical. We know this. It's just, it's who he is. Not a bad thing. Just who he is. It's okay.
I mean, I don't fist bump. Steve fist bumps. I'll handshake. I'll do that. I don't know.
Well, but
I have a hard time handshaking at the races because it's so many, and I'm scared I'm going to get sick. That's
thank
all.
You. That's why I do it. That's I do the fist really pump.
My only
yeah.
Thing.
I. Yeah. But okay, Kiefer. Besides the hugging, what'd you learn down in the pits?
Well, I went down and inspected Tristan Lane's motorcycle because
this.
I don't even know if I should say this on the show, but I'm going to release it because I don't know how big of a deal it is. Well, so we're all sitting up there in the press box, you know, Empire State Building, you know, thousands of feet high, and I'm watching, you know, practice, and I noticed that Tristan Lane is riding decent, but his bike is so brah brah. I can hear it all the way up there, and I'm like, that's an Akrapovic muffler, and they don't sound like that. Like, what the hell's going on with that thing? Like,
this is what Kiefer's got in the press box. He's watching privateer practice going.
He did call it though.
No. But he's like, what's with that muffler? just I don't know if there was too many people wondering what was up with Tristan Lane's muffler. But carry on, Kiefer. Good job.
You guys are worried about the riders. I'm worried about the motorcycles. Okay, so I heard that, and I'm like, he either cut his muffler. Or he did something to it. So I'm like, okay, check. I got to go down there. So I went down there, started walking around, and noticed that he ripped the guts out of it to get more, he thought, more bottom in. But in all reality, it really doesn't do that. It just sounds like that. So we had this conversation about sound versus output. So I tried to guide him the right way on a different muffler if he wants more bottom in. So that was one thing.
It's just shocking as a mechanic, like, and you as a racer, it's shocking that a rider would think that would give him more bottom end, taking away back pressure.
And you know who else was really excited about? So the whole team over there, and you got to help me with this because you're good at this, Steve. What's the team name that he's on? Next Level or something?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yep. Next Level.
Next Level. So, Chris, the owner at Fagala, he's a really nice guy. He helps all these guys. And Rod Bell started running up to me, Kiefer, check this out. And he's pointed at all the bikes, all the KTMs. I got all these guys on KYB inserts. I got them all on it, dude. They're all on it because of me. And so he was all stoked that all these guys reverted to KYB, right? So we talked about that for a little while. I talked to Mumford a little bit. He rode really good in qualifying. He was P3, mm-hmm. And he was out in front early. He was putting in solid laps, and he just looked frisky. So went and talked to him, and he finally is healthy. And he had some nagging injuries, and he says, I've been feeling good for a while. So he built his base up a little bit for his health and his fitness. So I wrote a little bit about that in daytime, about these guys just sometimes getting hurt and getting beat down, and they can't get a base. I think Mumford's starting to see some of his potential now that he's not always hurt, you know. So he says he's been feeling good. Coincidentally, it's the same engine builder that he uses now with Tony Smarttop Bullfrog Spa's Honda team is that he was on when he was with Michael Lindsay at the Chaparral team. So Chad at XPR built his engines at Chaparral. I'm sorry, not Chaparral. Was it Chaparral?
Yeah, yeah.
It was,
yeah. XPR Chaparral, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when he was on that team, Michael couldn't afford to get the good engine. So sometimes Chad and Carson would butt heads saying, hey, I need a faster engine. And Chad had one, but could never give it to him because Michael wouldn't pay for it, right? So now he sees what Chad can build him, and he's really in love with his Honda now. So I just thought that was kind of a funny little take, you know, now that he actually has all the parts that he needed. And I did find one tidbit out, and I don't know if I'm allowed to release it. A certain team manager is having another baby, and it's a boy. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yep.
You guys know where I'm going with that.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going.
He finally got one.
The legend continues.
Yes. The legend continues.
We talked to RJ. We talked to RJ a little bit, and he was breaking down gloves with Kiefer.
Yep.
Breaking down gloves.
Gloves are the most picky item a rider's repertoire by far.
Yeah.
By far.
And so Kiefer was dorking out with that discussion.
Yeah, we were talking about straps or no straps or how long the, you know, deep the glove
cuffs,
needs to be.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then I think that's pretty much it. Otherwise, it's very hard. You guys probably don't know this because when you walk with Steve, people want to talk to you, and then I lose Steve, and then you got to find Steve again. So it's like you lose Steve and find Steve like 3 to 4 times a day. And then sometimes it's very tough to gather yourself when you're around Steve because you end up talking to these people for 15 to 20 minutes at a time. And sometimes it's not about anything. It's just about a bunch of bullshit. So,
usually.
Yeah, you were saying, where are you? And then I kept updating you, but I was at a different truck every time to where I was the time before.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a witch hunt.
Well, that's like, and again, I appreciate the listeners. I appreciate the people that, you know, help put food on our table with the sponsor codes and things like that. But I got to go, man. I got to go.
Yeah. You actually, I feel like you've been better the last year or two with people actually taking photos and talking to them a little bit. You've been better. I will give
live
you that.
Live show Steve is a very different person than race day Steve.
Yes.
I feel. Steve will talk to anybody at the live show on race day. You're very lucky if you're not
A-list
celebrity. Oh, at the race
stop it. Attention. Stop it. I feel like you're paying money for the live shows.
I get it.
You know,
I
got to do this. But at the race, like I'm trying to do work. Like we talked about, I had to go deep, deep, deep a few times with some teams to find some answers and talk to people. And I got
Tomac's ankle.
Yeah, like the ankle, exactly. Right to the bottom of that. but like, yeah. So, you know, yeah. But Keith.
I also learned that if we could mic up the press box and just let it run audio.
Oh,
For 12 hours, I think it would be we all would be canceled, but it would be one great show.
Everybody's fired. Every rider, no rider Andy does any interview ever again in the history of the sport.
Look, the latest thing is just making nonstop Australian riders and racing series jokes with Kellen and how that's all he cares about. That's the latest thing. But Lewis is right out of hand up there. Yeah. So
it got to the point where Jaron Stapleton was doing decent. I go, Kellen, are you typing like a madman over there about Stapleton?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. And then I start talking about, hey man, do you have the results from Toowoomba? Do you have the results of the like whatever that track is called, you know? So, but yeah, look, it's don't do that. Weege was once up there in the press box with us, and yeah, he knows.
Didn't you ever say without him this week? It was kind of weird.
I would have been done. I mean, yes, I know those conversations all too well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Please, fans, if you do some sort of VIP program, it's Lawrence's or wherever you get access. Like, I know we're living in a cell phone era, but just please, please leave us be. Like, don't ruin it for everybody. Because, I mean, if there's a random in there, like, dude, I'm going to listen in on this, we're dead.
Well, hey, so one of the most harrowing moments of my TV career, if you call it that, so far, is that the mic is not always open, but someone can always hear it, if that makes sense. I did not know this. This was new information to me last year that there's always someone that can hear, even if it's not on, they can hear what's coming through that microphone. So I have acted accordingly ever since.
So the mic's hot on someone at all times.
At all times. Yep. Mm. Yep.
Yeah. It is not good because no one, here's the thing, JT, you probably figured this out. Even when you figure that out, that doesn't mean that everyone else that wants to chit chat knows that.
Right.
So you might be able to contain yourself, but some random, I mean, yes, you can run through the Rolodex.
That's okay. I don't want to get in trouble. Well, if they get in trouble about something, they say, I'm okay. That's fine.
You might have to just tell them every time, like, they say something that's off color, and you might be like, look, man, I'm not able to respond at this time.
I'm very careful with holding the microphone down if I'm talking to someone. And like, not even so much if it's bad, if it's just something they're telling me in confidence. I hold the microphone away because they're telling me, not whoever may be happening to wheel.
What if it's RV a few beers deep? Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, Chris, it was a long day. You hung in there. That was great. Like you kind of complained a little bit, but yeah.
No, no complaints. I just was like, there's not that much food up there, and I feel like luckily we got served an egg burrito, which was nice. That was a nice touch.
There was all kinds of snacks up there.
No, dude, you
really?
Dude, you would not eat any of that shit up there.
I was there like 4 times on Saturday. I'm not saying I would eat it. I'm just saying there were lots of different things up there.
But things that I don't want to eat, brownies.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I got it. I understand. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you had been in there 3 years ago, you'd be like, there's literally nothing.
So, really? Wow.
Yeah.
You guys might have covered this, but I just wanted to see what you guys thought. Did you guys talk about DV's take on the whole Barsha Jet thing?
No, I did not see DV's take as of podcast time.
So DV's take was the reason why Barsha was so far inside and going that direction was because Vince was behind him and he did something to Vince
yeah.
corner or so before. So he was covering his own ass,
yeah.
which led to all of this happening.
Yeah, we did talk about that and that he was, yes, probably scared of Vince and protecting the corner against a retaliation or something against Vince. And then Vince's yeah. bike is also broken between the finish line, which everyone got penalized on, and everything comes back to Vince.
Right.
So, you yeah. know, there is that as well, Kiefer. Well, yeah. listen, well, man.
Look, I had a good time regardless. It's cool, but, man, every week I'm out. I couldn't do it.
I'm not going riding as often as you, so I'm out. Couldn't
right.
do it.
Right. I need to do more things. Like, I need to be, involved in something more than just spectating and 10th place.
I don't know what you're doing on the other end of the phone.
He's imitating us tweeting.
But it could be anything.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? What was that movie with Jim Carrey when he's just typing, it's good, he's just typing a bunch of saying yes to everything. Yes, man? Is that yes, man?
No, that's where he's God or something. Isn't he God in that movie?
Yes, that's that one.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's Steve when he's typing, you know, just about all these guys down there. Just
yeah. Yeah. Sorry, man. It's what we do. But I'm going to put you full time on the beat next year because this is probably my last year. So.
He's going to give me all the prize possessions like St. Louis, Detroit. He's going to give me all of those.
Yeah. Well, never forget.
Can't wait for those post-race pods.
Yeah. Never forget, people. I sent Kiefer to a triple crown in St. Louis, and the post-race interviews were with everybody who didn't make the main.
My pods would have been about mufflers that were a little bit loud, babies that are coming. It would have been great. It would
yeah.
have
been hugs. Such a great
pod. Hugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you for the recap. I appreciate it.
yeah, no problem. Thanks, glad I could help.
Thanks for hanging in there. Yeah, we'll, see you back at the race.
I'll leave it to the professionals that are on the phone right now. I'll leave it to you guys.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
See you guys. Bye. Going. Yeah, bye.
All right. Thanks to Chris Kiefer for that. Great report.
That was great. Yeah. Kiefer's Corner.
Yeah, Kiefer's Corner, right.
Kiefer's Corner.
All right, let's get into this a little bit more. Cooper Webb. 5.62, yeah, definitely got better. Obviously got the penalized as well and got better as the race went on. His first one, I think he got passed in the first one. And it didn't look like – I think AP got him or maybe Anderson did get him. And then you're like, oh, boy. And then he picked it up and got better as the night went on. So that was awesome.
It's hard to ever have a better points night with a 5.62 than he had.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing with these crowns, too, the triple crowns, man. You just never – even if, the first one doesn't go your way, before you know it, you're third overall or second overall. Hunter Lawrence, first podium. 8.24, obviously helped by the penalties out there. But, yeah, anyway, either way you slice it, man. 8.24, yeah.
Yeah, I remember he was leading the first one, too. Crashed.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, he was that long ago.
Yeah.
Right.
By then 100 other things had happened.
Yeah, yeah.
In between that and the podium, yeah.
And then I heard at some point one of my group texts was saying he was out for the night with a knee injury, and I'm like, what? And then I texted Lars, and Lars said, no, he just hurt his leg a little bit, but he's fine. So it went from being out for the night a leg injury
yeah.
to third overall. AP 3.86. Hey man, that first one with Tomac was pretty good. Like for a little while there, he was on it, and then he said he kept messing up, but
fell apart, right?
Yeah,
that's what he said. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
fell apart. But,
yeah,
and yep. And then I said, well, I said, yeah, it looked like you were, having trouble with that one rhythm, before the whoops, and he's like, yeah, man, my bike was just doing weird things, man. My bike was weird. So, yeah, I think that was pretty funny. He was just like saying his bike was throwing him different ways. That he didn't think. So, by the way, JT, talk about Tomac. You know, he didn't go over the 5-footer like everybody else did. 3.233 in that rhythm before the whoops. It was visibly faster. And I mean, obviously the ruts are different. Maybe he's trying to stay out of them, but I thought that was weird. But he made it work. Like it was no problem. He obviously was great all night. But I thought that was super weird. That like they. They must have timed, because he can do that. He's Eli Tomac. It's not like he can't do that. They must have timed it differently than the people I talked to who timed it.
Yeah, I think I just chalked it up to he just felt more comfortable there.
Yeah.
And the time was negligible.
Yeah.
He was like, well, I'm just going to do the one I like better.
Yeah, which he's done before in other races. Yeah. Sexton, fifth overall, not a good night for Chase. Fell in the Oldenburg collected everybody, and he felt really bad after the race. I mean, he's like, not like I wanted to do that. But Oldenburg pulls the whole shot, basically. And then he says he never did that triple all day. But he's like, well, I'm in front. I guess I got to do it.
For it.
Yep. And he said he didn't give it enough gas. And so he never did that all day long. And so he took out Chase. He took out Adam. Jet got caught up in there. It was a whole thing. So Sexton got caught up in that. And then 5-3, he was really good the second half of the third race. And other than that, man, he was just going backwards a little bit in the second one and never looked that good. So
yeah, Wait, hold on. He was good at the second half of the third race?
Yeah.
But wasn't he on Eli's wheel early and then eventually got third?
Went past him, yeah. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, but no.
I don't think he could be great.
But he got gapped right away, and then he got on it again and got up. Like, he caught those guys, or caught Webb a little bit.
I see.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, just one of those races.
It was a step back. Oh, yeah. I guess my takeaway was a step back from Seattle.
Well, and he said in Seattle, like, I'm happier. You're going to see better. I'm back riding, obviously. I'm happier. Things are going to go better from here on out is what he was saying. And this one wasn't. Yeah. So
I kind of feel like Triple Crowns were kind of finding out that, like, there's so much randomness and chaos that you almost cannot control your result. Like, your result is 70% you. And 30% just the way the ball bounces and luck and weird stuff.
Yeah, and if you have a tough first one, your gate pick for the second one's not as good, and then it's a ball rolling either way, right?
Yeah, if you're Sexton, Webb, Anderson, any of those guys, they could have gotten second or sixth with just one rando thing. They're just whatever way the luck turns out.
Well, and the one thing that Ollie was telling me after the race was about Barcia is, like, he was on this was his best result of the year, and he would have got a fifth, you know, if he hadn't fallen there or, you know, hit Jet. And he was riding really good. But, yeah, his race will forever be the torpedo race. So, Malcolm 798. I don't have much for Malcolm other than Oldenburg posted on his social. Malcolm takes him out in the second one, like, hits him in a turn and drags him up the face of a triple. And Oldenburg's just left, like, dangling. Mookie looks back, jumps it, and keeps going. And then Mitch Oldenburg said that Mookie came up to him. Did I hit you?
Didn't know.
Yeah. Did I hit you? And and Mitchell's like, yeah, man, and you drug me up.
Okay, gave it away.
Yeah, you drug me up the face of a thing. So. My bad. But, yeah.
The only thing that I want to mention about Malcolm is that's unbelievable. I guess that's the karma. You don't jump the triple cleanly when you hole shot. That's what you get in race two.
Yeah.
What I was looking at, if I have this right, Jet was penalized two positions. If he gets the race two win and doesn't have any penalty at all, I'm not even sure he beats Malcolm in points. I don't know if it would have any impact on the championship at all. The penalty, obviously, the Barcia thing did, but just the way it turned out, I'm like, I think he gets eighth, whether he gets a win or a third or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, because five guys got penalized, so I guess I'd have to do all that revision math.
Yeah.
But in the end, it almost became inconsequential. I think
it's going to be really interesting if anything changes.
Yeah.
By tomorrow, what that does, if anything, to the points. So.
Yeah.
Oh, like if Webb, I guess here's one thing, like if Jet gets unpenalized and Webb continues to be penalized, like that could start making an impact.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jet's eighth overall, 2-3-21. He was 2-1 going into the last one. We had a 1-2 and a 2-1 going to the last one. That would have been awesome, right?
I mean, he showed he was still the best guy, in my opinion. He did win the race, made big mistakes, but It was still a pretty impressive ride by him outside of the drama.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, all the stuff in Seattle stopped him, and he got third. And then all the stuff happened this weekend, right? And it's like the guys – that's why I'm not worried. The guy's really good. But, yeah, like you, JT's fourth quarter crappy team thing counts as well. Yeah.
I don't like saying that because Webb is not a crappy team. You know what I mean? It's just
– No,
When you dominated a game –
Yeah,
and you let the other team hang around, that's a scary spot to be in. That's all.
Justin Cooper, 9-10-9, and he went down up front in the third one. These things all blend together. Second one?
I think second one.
Second
I think
it
was one? The second one, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, funny stat. So this we have a clear – because I was looking at Justin Cooper's season for my column earlier, and you look at – who have been the best seven guys all year long? Lawrence, Webb, Sexton, Tomac, Roczen, AP, Anderson, right? We all agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've been – so
yeah.
Out of all the podiums all year long, including Triple Crowns, only two riders have made the podium outside of the big seven, let's call it. I found like that is a weird stat. Like, we don't have random, you know, Triple Crowns, random things happen, right? But Barsha's got one and Hunter Lawrence has got one. And that's it.
Yeah.
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 The other group of top riders have all the podiums. So. Okay. McElrath was happy with his race. He made some changes on his bike and he's happier and he feels like he can just ride now a little bit, race a little bit. I talked to him. That seventh and the second and the third one was really good. Good start by him. And after the race, I should have mentioned that. I didn't talk to him enough about that and I kind of forgot. Again, these things, there was so much going on. Anderson is DGAF and getting two penalized twice is awesome. 4-7-9 for Anderson. Roczen, oh boy. First one, bike went, radiator hose went, jumped on the second one. He got in the Oldenburg thing, he blew up his radiator spigot thing on the cylinder head. So then jumped on the second bike, and he said the brakes didn't work. I talked to Peyton, his practice bike guy. The brakes didn't work because the bike was brand new, and I guess it had been sitting around, and maybe some crap got on the brakes. And then the motor was a little different, and the bars were weird. And Peyton said that he was like, I could ride it, man. It took me five laps to get used to it because he literally was rolling around for five laps. I don't know if you, JT, noticed that. Like, he was
–
the first spot of the second one was like – just him getting used to this bike.
Yeah. I mean, even if you had it exactly the same,
yeah,
no bike feels exactly the same.
Yeah. And
like,
so
they just don't. They're motorcycles. Like, they're, right. You know, they're imperfections. They're different.
Our buddy Phil, who we'll get to, told his team, swap the motor. I don't want to get on my backup bike. So that, because he just didn't want to ride.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have time to really get used to it. Like, yeah, they're different. You got to think about all the parts that are like handmade. You know, like, there's no way to make them exactly the same, you know, and there's no adjustment period for Kenny, right? Like, you're just thrown into this race. So
yeah,
I can relate for sure.
Yeah. 18-13-5. Benny was good again, crashed in two of the mains and came from the back and then also started the second race with no hole shot device. Cause something was broken on it. I didn't realize it. So he said it wasn't that bad though. And I'm like thinking to myself, yeah, Benny, cause you're 6 foot seven. So a normal a normal start is fine for you, Benny. You know,
just lean your neck a little further over the bars and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Chiz, 15-14-12. Chiz told me he did see the red cross flag, but he was also taking off from the right hand side. So I was just asking some other riders about, like, hey, did you see it? Nichols still not happy. Nichols had to win the LCQ, but he was happy with his 2.11s, which is good for him. Stop me if you guys want to mention anything. Oldenburg, we talked about. Shout out to Oldenburg for...
I did not realize that Nichols just straight up didn't make the main.
Yeah.
I was looking at the results, and I'm like, wait, where... I was so confused. I'm like, don't even tell me he just didn't make another LCQ. I didn't even realize that in Seattle. He got seventh in the LCQ.
Yeah. Yeah, not great.
No.
I asked him, I said, like, does it, because Benny's happy with his bike. Benny really is. Even when I shut the recorder off, Benny's in a good place. And I'm like, does it help that, you know, your teammate likes his bike and they, these guys can get it close? And he said, yeah, I guess. It didn't seem like a whole lot of confidence, but shout out to Oldenburg too, by the way. I don't know if JT, if you saw this, but he was one of the first guys to jump the double out of the first turn, like over the starting first turn to go double in.
Yeah, I didn't notice him doing it, but I did. Yeah. I did see kind of when that all started happening. I think Jed and Kenny and a few guys, but I didn't notice Oldenburg.
Yeah, he was literally one of the first guys to do it. And I said to him, what, you know, shout out. I gave him props for that. And he said, yeah, Jed did it right in front of me. It looked easy. I'm like, okay. So, yeah. So it wasn't the first guy to do it, but for a privateer dude, good job, Oldenburg. And then he got, then he caused a huge crash, and then he got blown off his bike by Malcolm. So, Justin Hill was greasy in the third one as far as being a lapper. JT, did you notice that? Like,
no.
He was not getting out of the way. He cost Sexton.
Really?
Yeah, he cost Sexton a spot. Webb got Sexton because of Justin Hill not getting out of the way. He was battling with Cade, and Cade was freaking out because we all – oh, Cade got yelled at again by Coop again. So, but, yeah, man, Hill was not paying attention to the flags, like, badly. And then I actually asked the rider, and he said that Hill told him, yeah, I don't care, man. I don't care. So, okay, cool, man. And he looked like it. He looked like it. He was just degaff. They're waving it. He's moving left to right. Sexton's like going, oh, and then he jacks up Sexton, and Webb gets by. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Jeremy Hand, good job for Jeremy Hand. Freeze, we covered. Anybody want to?
Just a little bit.
Anybody
just a little bit.
Weigh in on that. Cade, 19, 16, 18 for 20th.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
bad math.
Freddie Norn. I had him in fantasy. Freddie went down a lot. Oh, Freddie was up there. Freddie went down a lot. And AC hurt his ankle. In a crash with Oldenburg, and that was it for him. AC said on our live show that there's a podcast dropping next week with some big news. So I think we can all do the math on that one.
Is it ours?
What?
Is it our podcast?
No, his own.
Oh.
His own.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, you didn't specify. I was like, maybe. Wow. I was really looking forward to our next episode.
Oh, yeah. No. He's dropping his own podcast with some news. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
You know. All right.
It just sucks that you know the dude has one goal and one goal only. Let's just not get hurt.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. No. Oldenburg flips.
Yep.
And he's in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yep. All right. That's 450 class. Anything else? 450-wise? Anybody?
Nope.
Wage?
Nah, it's been a long show already.
Yeah, we're already an hour and a half in almost.
Nice. Oh, God.
Okay. Thank you to the folks at Fly Racing, flyracing.com, as always. Check them out on the web or at your favorite local dealer. Formula S helmets, amazing. Really appreciate those guys coming on board. The great Justin Brayton still wearing Fly. RJ Hampshire. JT, you guys had the red plates with Anstey and RJ at one point, you know, Fly Racing. So, yeah, good job.
It was basically we were basically Mitch Payton for 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. So thanks to the folks at that. And also thanks to the folks at motorsport.com. Go through the banner on pulpmx.com to help us out. OEM and aftermarket parts as well. Great prices, great return policy, dedicated team of gearheads there to help you out at motorsport.com. OEM and aftermarket parts, the best online ordering place by far, without a doubt. Motorsport.com. Onyx Maps as well, Weej.
Yes, Onyx Maps has been making some changes. They got master classes you could take with people who are experienced in the off-highway vehicle or a mountain bike field. They got new apps. Check it all out. Go to onxoffroad.com or onxmaps.com. Onyx Offroad in the App Store, and check out the improved app. And this is basically a way to find places to ride, public and private lands, lots of trails mapped out, notes and information. So go, and then type in RacerX, all one word, all lowercase, and save 20%.
So I said earlier that Chiz did see the Red Cross flag. I texted another rider at the beginning of this pod. I said, did you see the Red Cross? Nope. The whole thing was bullshit. And this was a rider that did not get penalized. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but the whole thing was bullshit. So. Okay. 250 class. Yeah, Levi Kitchen. He is on a roll. The chef is cooking it up right now.
God, he's good.
Great starts. He'd been leading in hole shots coming in with four the most, and then now he got – I don't know if he officially got all three, but
– Yeah, he did.
He's well, on, yeah.
Yeah, close enough.
He's on fire. Levi Kitchen, everybody.
I sat next to Mitch Payton this morning on the flight from St. Louis to Salt Lake, and we both had the same take, which was – I felt reassured because Mitch is really smart, right? Like, he's been around this sport longer than I've been alive, probably. And so when he talks, I usually like to listen. And so I really enjoyed myself and the fact that we were on the same spot as this. Is like, Levi's winning. It's awesome. Great. But the way he is winning is the most impressive, where he's not on the edge at all. Like, he's not taking chances. He's not making mistakes. He looks like he could do 1,000 laps the way he's doing them. And that is a very, very powerful thing, because you think about the 250 class, these guys are usually like, oh my God, he's going to die at any second. Right. And then he happens to win the race. And you're like, "Woo, he made it." That's not the way Levi looks at all. So that's a really nice feather in his cap.
Yeah. It looks like he could do anything at any time. I think what covers it, Weege. Like, that's exactly it. And Seattle was the same way. Like, how many laps did you want to do in Seattle? Levi could just go for 100.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I mean, this is pretty early in his development to do this. I mean, we don't see this a lot. It seems like the 250 class these days, it's year 3, 4, 5.
Or year 15, like, or year 15, 12, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, when you think about the guys he's battling, I mean, he's battling RJ and Jordan. So I don't want to get too far ahead here, but I'm already starting to be like, oh, Levi Kitchen. Like, is this a guy down the road? Is Cowie going to be like, oh my God, thank you for having this land in our laps? Like, you know, is this going to be like the hot prospect coming out into the 450 class, you know, over the next couple of years? Like, I don't know if he was on that level going into this season, but I don't think it would be long at this rate where that conversation's starting to happen. Like,
I talked to him in Florida. He wants to, he's going to ride next year and then 450s. So.
Yeah, but if he stays at this level, he is going to be instead of one of the guys, he's going to be the talked about guy.
Right. Yeah, you do wonder, because we think Prado's going to be there for a 3-year deal starting next year. Anderson would be, you know, the guy out. He's got another year, and then it would line up with Kitch going over there. So,
yeah, I don't imagine when Kitchen went over to Pro Circuit. I mean, that was good for Mitch, great deal for, obviously, Levi. It's worked out great. But I don't know if Kawasaki Brass was like, oh, we just locked in a future 450 race winner here. Like, I don't know if that's what they were thinking.
You left Star Racing, right? Like, you left Star? Like, what?
Yeah. But now...
There was nothing assured when he left Star, right? Like, it was well, this guy's pretty good. Yeah. It wasn't this, though.
No, so that's... It's rapidly... To me, the narrative around him is changing very quickly.
And I love that he, like... He didn't want the Star program. He didn't like it. He didn't like the structure. He didn't like having to be in a bicycle ride at 9. He didn't like all the things that involved the Star team, and said, I can work as hard. And it wasn't a thing of like, I'm too lazy. It's like, I just don't need that. I'll work hard my own way, you know, by myself or with Chase and all that. Like, you know, people would look at that and be like, oh, he doesn't like this, you know, the Star program.
I think there were a few other things there too.
Yeah. But that was one of them. And so obviously he's doing exactly all the work that, you know, one needs to do. So away from a structured program. By the way, speaking of Star, I heard in the pits this weekend, dude, Kawasaki really wants Deegan. Every team wants Deegan. Every team would take every team. We don't need to just pick out one team. Whenever his contract is up, you know.
Well, Steve, if he ever figures out how to ride Supercross, think what they'd want him then.
Yeah, one win in a year and a half. Great work. Legendary. But that's like saying,
I have to take that shot.
That's like saying, hey, JT, man. I hear Cowie really wants Jet Lawrence, man. I hear that. They really want Jet Lawrence.
It's hot property.
Yeah.
Jet Lawrence.
Yeah, somebody asked me a few weeks ago, hey, if you know, Fly Racing ever got a chance to sign Jet, would you guys do it?
Nah, man.
We're good.
Nah.
Like, we just pass on that.
Yeah.
We'll stay with what we got.
Yeah. We got Brayton, and we're good. Yeah. Sorry for the shot at Brayton there. I just meant as a
retirement. How dare you? I think they are good.
I think I, you know, Brayton came to the press box, unlike Weege, even at races that he's at, and he brought the two-time Canadian champion Brad Hagseth with him. So, Nice to see Hegseth there. What?
JB's Rolodex of people that he's bros with. So they had JT, you would know how to say the name. What is it? Christian Vandeveld, the former Tour de France competitor, and you know, he's an NBC Sports analyst for that. He does JT's job, but he does it on the back of my motorcycle during the event, which JT...
I didn't know that. Wow, shit.
Yeah, that was a big topic on these shows when he showed up this weekend. JT, I think... I don't know. I feel like the bar has been set.
I'll do it.
Okay.
I'm a yes man. I will do it.
Of JT on the back of someone's bike during the Supercross laps. Yeah.
On the back of Vince's bike. On the back of Vince's bike.
Oh, God.
No, the dangerous place is on the front of Vince's bike. At the back, you're fine.
Yeah, look at Marcia. So, a lot of race day live, man, it's the car wash. They're just bringing people in, bringing people out. But not JB, man. When they come on the show, it is almost always someone that JB has a legit personal relationship with. This is not fake, you know, hey, good close personal friend. No, he's talking about going on mountain bike rides with him, and I'm just like, is there anyone? And then you got the Bragg Hadsa story. Is there anyone that he does not bro down with, or hasn't bro down with, or doesn't have a relationship with? Yeah. Just endless.
I think him and Kiefer hugged in the press box. I think there was a hug there too.
Yeah, wouldn't doubt it.
Well, to bring it back around full circle on Vince Freese, somebody was asking me, like, you know, I know you don't seem to like him, whatever. Like, tell me more about this. And I was like, the best way I can put it to you is I've only ever heard Justin Brayton talk poorly about one person in my entire life, and that was Vince Freese. That's all you need to know. That's the only. That's all you need to know.
So, anyways, also, so if anybody takes anything away from this podcast, just know that Kawasaki's interested in Deegan.
Okay, they see something in him.
Yeah, yeah.
They see something. They see some talent, potential.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm just like, okay, cool, man. All right, Shimoda. 233, good starts. Starts are better, you know?
It's definitely getting better.
Yeah.
Definitely getting better.
The series is winding down. He's getting better.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
He's warming up just in time.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
2025, he gets it done. Absolutely.
He should take a dive. He really should just blow it in these last three races. Just to calm that narrative down.
Jordan Smith, 324. RJ, 442. RJ's starts were terrible. Oh, they were not good. The first two, anyways, not good. Jordan was consistent all night, and those guys were going at it, but they both lost points to the Kitch. Thrasher was, strangely, not that good. He said he battled arm pump on social media, but he was up there. He was latching. It looked like it was going to be some great races, and then he just slowly went backwards. So... Marchbanks 965. Stop me if you heard this before. His starts weren't very good. They were better in the second one, but still not good. Yeah. Juju Beaumeyer 687. Got a great start in the first one. He led, didn't he? Did he lead? No,
he passed,
Kitchen got him.
Kitchen.
Yeah, past Kitchen, and Kitchen got him back. I heard through some people that would know that KTM's a little not happy with him, and I'm like, what? Like, huh? This dude was in Futures last year. He's fine. Yeah. Like, is he crushing it? No, but he's fine to me. I don't know. So,
yeah, I feel like, first of all, how many normal races track-wise have we even had?
And the dude, and the dude
for Steve.
The dudes from Havasu. Like, you think he's got a lot of Pacific Northwest type of riding in him? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's been fine. I heard, though, from, someone to know that KTM's like, he's got to be better. And I'm just like, okay, he's riding against...
I mean, it's fair. It's fair criticism, but there's got to be some patience applied here.
I mean, he's riding against guys who have kids and children. Like, what what do you want him to do? He's racing against 30-year-olds, you know?
It all depends on what the bar is, though.
Rider D crashed early in the third one, 7-7-12 for Rider D. Mumford is ninth, but as Kiefer said, like, his qualifying speed was impressive. I don't know where that came from. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, he's riding good.
He was riding really good and then never got starts.
He got fifth in Seattle. Like,
impressive speed, qualified third overall, though, I think. Like Kiefer said.
He's riding well. You have to look for it a little bit at times, but it's there.
That might be Talon Hawkins, one of the best results for Talon Hawkins, a 10th, right? Like in his career? Did he ever do better on the KTM? On a Husky Varner, I mean? Yeah.
I don't know. Last year was pretty rough. He really had a rough he shouldn't have been doing it last year. He was their futures guy. They subbed him in for Swole. Yeah. I don't feel like it went that well.
And then
I don't know.
Clippy.
Yeah. Life comes at you fast, Juju. Jeez,
yeah,
these guys.
I know, right?
Jeez.
Phillip was 12th. Good starts, Phillip. The last two. Even the first one, too. Good starts for Phil. But, yeah, bike issue pulled off early. And
slow. Slow, as his social media said.
Yeah.
Slow AF, he says.
Yeah.
Just slow. Slow AF, actually.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Lee Diffie for doing, first of all, he summed up earlier in the evening, he summed up Phil's take on Seattle in the most classy, like the most un-Phil-like way, like the filter that they had to take. This must have taken, I mean, this is how classy Lee Diffie is. This is like a political scandal of the highest order. And then the spin people come in and try to figure out how can we frame this. So the way Lee Diffie eloquently explained Phil's take on how bad Seattle was, it was just incredible. I mean, not a single word is what the word that Phil would have actually used.
Yeah.
But then later, Diff came on and just said, then he just dumped it all and said that he was on Steve Mathis's Pulp MX show. And
yeah.
Said he was going to put the bike in third gear and just ghost ride it off the track.
Yeah, I got that clip sent to me. Classy Lee listening to Pulp. Then so Phil Frankie Latham, who was a subject of Phil's anger last week on the show.
That's great.
Frankie said he got a text from the president of KTM. And he was like, and then the text was like, hey, heard you on the Pulp show. Or heard about you on the Pulp show. And then Frankie's like, oh, like shit. Like, you know, like, because he was kind of like taunting the competition, right? And like, you could say this in a way, right? Like, I don't know. It's the president of KTM. And then it was just laughing.
That guy's really cool.
Yeah, but then it was just laughing emojis.
Yeah.
Really cool. Frankie was a little worried, and then it was all good because the president of KTM thought it was hilarious that he was taunting the competitors.
Hines is you probably know him, Steve, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Not really good, but
yeah, he literally posted a photo of himself going riding today on a Sunday afternoon. Like,
yeah,
he's no different. He could actually hang in the press box. These conversations we said that people cannot hear.
Yeah,
he'd be fine.
Yeah.
It's not what
he came like all the way through the program. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
he is, yeah. I think he truly gets it, you know, air quotes gets it.
He was there when I was there, I believe.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Weesh? Yeah, probably.
Like, I think he was there.
I would imagine so. Yeah.
I know John Eric.
Yeah, he's
was,
just yeah. an enthusiast. He's an yeah. enthusiast.
Yeah.
This wasn't like a corporate guy they brought in to run KTM. Like this
yeah.
guy is.
No,
he's one of us.
The president is really happy that his mechanic or his crew chief is. Yeah. So, So Phillip is 12th. He's hosting the Pulp show tomorrow night, too. Co-hosting with
oh,
me.
God.
So, yeah. Should be fantastic.
Yes.
Simonson jumped the 250s because it would be easier to make the main than the 450s. And he got it right. Yeah. So he did that. And then he's back to 450s now. So he just borrowed – who's Mitch's guy in the 250 class? Who's Mitch Kendra? No. Mitch Kendra.
Oh, Keegan Rowley?
Yeah. So he borrowed Keegan Rowley's bike.
Threw
a suspension on it. So,
shout out
Keegan Rowley. Devin Simonson rode his bike. Mosman was good and then crashed hard.
Oh,
and I heard
big ones.
Yeah, I heard they were worried about his neck and his head, and they took him to the hospital. I heard. So, hope he's all right. He was okay.
Oh my god!
But yeah,
I didn't think he was going to race after the practice crash.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, Mosman.
Yeah, so that's not going well for Mosman. Other than that, that's all I got.
Anything else? Long show.
Stapleton, Varese, Jorgensen, Lux Turner. Drew Adams won the futures. Cochran crashed.
Towers crashed.
Who? Towers crashed.
Towers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also Cole Davies got a bad start. The pride of Manitoba, Ryder McNabb, had a rough night. But, yeah, Drew Adams is – I don't know anything about this, but Drew won Daytona also.
Yes.
And so he's on he's really riding well right now. He won this Texas race too, big time, I guess, by 30 seconds. So
yep.
he's – and he looks just like Dan Truman, and Dan Truman's helping
he's
him out.
He's a Truman protege.
Yeah, he really is, yeah. So –
The one thing way back, Drew Adams' dad wanted to make it clear that he knows that you take shots at the names of the young riders in the sport.
Oh, oh shit. Okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. And he's like, I just want to make it clear that our son is just named Drew. Like, we just have a normal name.
Yeah.
Just a normal name.
Yeah.
So just take that information
I think there
that
was
should make you a fan already.
I think there was a Brixton this weekend.
Oh,
yeah,
of course there was.
Yeah, Brixton.
Of course there was. Yes.
So yeah, Drew Adams is on a roll right now. Good job, Futures kid, I guess. So, and then Daniel Daniel Blair's kid got second, and Daniel brought him over to me to interview, and I didn't know anything about this kid, so Daniel kind of gave me some background, and then Daniel said, "I'm throwing him into the wolves right away," and I'm like, "Oh,
yeah, he's really young."
Yeah,
yeah, he's really young.
Yeah, so. All right, Fly Racing, Racer X Podcast, St. Louis. Lots to talk about, let's face it. And thanks to Chris Kiefer as well for his in-depth reviews. We're off for a week. Thank
you. I'm off to Italy.
Oh, you are? You're going to the GP?
Yep.
How we feel about hurlings? I mean, there's been a lot of backtracking from the hurlings.
Big round.
You people.
It's a big chapter in the story of Jeffrey Hurlings.
Hurlings super fans, it's like, we'll be okay at round one, we'll podium round two, we will win round three, because it's a little bit of sandy track. Not Lomel sandy, but it's a little sandy. And now, Weege, the Hurlingites, as I call them, we might get beat by Prado, is now the word. We might get beat by Prado.
I'm going over for reinforcements.
Right? Yeah.
I feel like it's coming unraveled, so he needs every bit of support.
He didn't podium round two like they all said, and now it's like, Prado might beat us. Like, they're unbelievable, these guys. They just, they can't help themselves. So,
well, there's 56 motos to go? Is that? No, 54.
54 now?
54 motos to go.
Yeah.
That was startling. I'll tell you this, what's crazy with having essentially a three-moto weekend, I know the Saturday race there was a little less, but dude, he's down so many points already. It's shocking. He's like, I think he's 38 points down or something already. And I'm like, ow.
Yeah.
No way to save from that guy.
Well, but at the same token, when you have literally 60 motos, I guess what he's saying, 20 rounds and they race on Saturday, one moto. So 60. I mean, it's like everybody's getting a broken collarbone at some point. So as long as you keep within broken collarbone range.
Yeah, Cody Shock proved it. That doesn't even matter. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, I just feel like at some point every single guy will miss one weekend.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how much money you would have to pay me to get on a plane to Italy for this week off weekend. I don't know what would be the amount that I would need to possibly get on an airplane for this weekend. It would be a lot of money. Yeah. It would have to be Jeffrey hosting me personally under his tent and all of that.
Pray for me. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. All right.
JT's gnarly.
Thank you.
Hi, guys.
Okay, thank you, Fly, Renthal, Maxis, Motorsport.com, OnX Maps, Weege, JT. Thanks, boys.
See ya.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change the air. Don't change the air.